Hello and welcome to everybody to episode 43 of Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. Who else but Craig is going to be by my side? How are you, Craig?
Hello, Reza. I'm fine. How are you doing?
Very well indeed.
Welcome to everybody.
What have we got, Craig? What have we got for today?
What have we got today? We've got some job interviews, tips, advice, vocabulary. We had a request from a listener who is looking for a job and would like advice on how to apply for a job and do an interview in English. So maybe we can help that person and others who are in need of looking for work and need English to look for a job. So shall we start?
Let's get cracking.
Let's look at job, work and career and explain the difference between those two. What do you think? Do you have students asking you sometimes,
yes,
what's the difference, Mr. Reza, between job, work and career?
Monthly, every month.
And carrera, being a force friend?
Yep, all the time. The first thing I would start with job and work, because perhaps they're the most common words. A job is countable. You can have a good job, a bad job. In these days, many people have two jobs, even three jobs.
That's right.
So job is countable. You can say a job and you can say two, three, four. You can count it. Work is not countable. It's uncountable. So when you're talking about your profession, you don't say a plus work. No. You just have to say work. For example, I enjoy my work.
So you can say, I have a lot of work. I have two jobs.
Yeah. That's a lot of plus work. You cannot say, I have two plus works. You can't say that.
Right. There is one area of vocabulary, not professions, but an area in which work would be a countable noun, and that's in art, if you're speaking about the works of Picasso, for example.
Yes, but that's obras.
But that's obras de arte. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But usually when speaking about jobs, work, then it's an uncountable noun and a verb.
What about this classic you mentioned, Craig? Career, carrera, ooh, what's all that about?
Yeah, I hear this mistake all the time, Reza, my students saying, I'm studying a career. I'm studying
degree.
I'm doing a degree.
Doing a degree, yeah. Studying
or
for a degree.
Or my studies. I'm working hard on my studies at the moment. I'm studying physics. I'm studying art.
But just to clarify specifically what you do at university in the UK for 3 or 4 years, in Spain 4 or 5, is a degree.
That's right.
That's what you do at university. And then after university, Craig, once you have your degree, if you've been successful and you start your job, let's say as an architect, that's going to be your career.
Exactly. So when you stop studying and you start working, that is when you begin your career. So you have a career in engineering or a career in teaching. You can change careers, and many people do. When they reach their 40s or late 30s, they decide to change their area of expertise. So they might do a law degree, start working as a lawyer, start their career as a lawyer in law, realize it's not for them, they don't like it, and then change careers to medicine, for example. Mm-hmm. So you can have a career change. But again, your career begins when you leave university, when you stop studying, and when you start working.
But career's not just for any old job. For example, I finished my university studies, imagine, recently, and I want to get a job. So I start working at McDonald's, flipping burgers. To flip means put them up in the air and on the other side.
Johnny No Stars.
Is that a career?
No, you can have a career at McDonald's, but careers at McDonald's tend to be managerial careers, working on the burger bar.
So career is something which you plan to be long-term. It's serious. You've trained for it.
It implies professionalism. It implies studies.
Training, yeah.
Exactly.
You don't need to train that much to flip a burger.
No. By the way, before we continue with vocabulary, to remind our listeners that we have spoken about work and job vocabulary in the past. If you go to episodes 9 and 32, you will also find words connected to jobs, career, work, and professions, etc. And I will put the links to both of those episodes in the show notes at inglespodcast.com. There is a special verb for to ask for a job, a formal way of asking for employment.
To apply for a job?
To apply for a job. And the noun is application. And when you apply for a job, it's very common to complete an application form, which you send to a company or a prospective employer with your CV.
CV? What's that?
Curriculum vitae.
Aha. Just like in Spanish, they say the same, don't they?
Well, they'd say curriculum.
Ah, they don't bother with the word vitae.
They don't say CV. True. But in British English, I would say CV.
And in American English?
Resume. Okay. They take the French resume. So resume in the US and CV in the UK. When you apply for a job and you have an interview, it's very common to speak about the extra things that you get in a job apart from your salary, which will be your perks, the perks of a job, or your fringe benefits, beneficios, adicionales in Spanish. And also your prospects. What are my prospects? The possibilities in the future of improving your situation, of getting promoted.
Promoted, getting put in a higher position.
Higher position and hopefully a higher salary, more responsibility.
What's the opposite of promoted, Craig? If you do something bad and they put you down,
you're demoted.
Demoted.
Yeah, you don't want that. Demoted to a lower position. Also common, references. Your future employer may ask for your references. Other people who know you on a professional basis and can write about your work ethic, your character, how well or how badly you worked in the past. Those are references from previous employers.
So they might ask you to give them a job reference, that's a professional one, or a character reference about your character.
Which is more personal, right. Exactly. You'd commonly speak about your experience, your work experience in an interview, and your qualifications, the pieces of paper, your degrees, courses that you've done, where you can prove that you have learned something. Those are your qualifications. Can you think of any other useful words, Reza, connected to work that we need to cover before we speak about interviews?
I would mention contracts and contractual conditions. Your contract is a legal document which you have to sign, write your signature, saying exactly what you must do for the company. And in that contract will be your conditions, your contractual conditions or contractual obligations.
And your hours, the hours that you will be expected to work, the days and the hours. And hours are wrongly translated by Spanish speakers sometimes as timetable. A Spanish speaker might say, what will be my timetable? Well, your timetable you could possibly have in a school or a college or a university. Timetable is a very common when you speak about transport, trains, buses and planes, but in an office, you'd speak about your hours. What will my hours be? Mm-hmm. What are my regular hours?
And another thing which is more relevant than ever, and it's becoming more and more of a hot issue, un tema polémico. What type of contract are they going to give you? Are you going to be full-time, part-time? Are you going to be permanent, indefinido, permanente? Are you going to have a fixed-term contract? That means we employ you for 3 months from January to March and then it finishes.
That's a fixed-term contract. That's useful.
And there are all sorts of strange mixtures these days because the labour market el mundo laboral, el mercado laboral, the labor market is fast changing these days, and it's becoming more and more complicated, and new types of contracts, even daily contracts, exist these days. I know people personally, friends of mine in Valencia, who are given contracts by the day. I'm not exaggerating.
What field are they working in?
Things like, for example, I have a friend of mine who works in a water bottling plant. And he's been working there for a long time, for years, but still they give him contracts by the week, by the day. They keep renewing, renovar, they keep renewing his contract. They know they're going to need him, but just to save money, they say, oh, we need you for 3 days, then 1 day, no. 2 days, yes, 3 days, no.
That's terrible. That must lead you to feel very insecure about your employment.
And job insecurity. Big issue these days, isn't it? We don't need to tell our Spanish listeners about that. I'm sure a lot of them know all about it.
Unfortunately, it's all too common. Another important question you should perhaps ask in an interview is, will I be expected to work overtime? And if I do work overtime, time hours outside of my contract, will I be paid for it? Because it's very common to have this nebulous area of it's not very sure how many hours you'll be expected to work, but you won't get paid for staying until 10 o'clock at night. And that's very unfair. So I think it's important to be clear at the interview and make sure it's in the contract if you will be expected to work overtime. And if you do, will it be paid at a higher rate?
Very often there's a special overtime rate, isn't there?
Yeah.
People often talk about, for example, if you work overtime, you get paid time and a half. That means you get paid 1.5 times the normal hourly rate.
So if you're earning 20 euros an hour, your overtime rate at time and a half will be 30 euros an hour.
Right.
Yeah.
Although these days in Spain, good luck trying to get that overtime rate. I don't think any employer will give it to you.
No, but it should be clarified, because it's a bargaining chip at the interview. If the employer wants you as an employee, then you do have some flexibility to negotiate a better contract and better conditions for yourself. Preparing for a job interview, the first thing I would do, now I haven't looked for a job for many years, but what I would advise students to do is first Google the company that they are going to work for, or that they hope to be working for. So find out as much as you possibly can on the internet about the company before you go. Read everything you can, do your homework about the company so that you have a good idea of the company's history, of what they have done, their achievements in the past, so that you feel comfortable speaking about the company in the interview. I think that's very important.
Yeah. And if they're going to be interviewing you in English, or they're going to test your English, read about the company in English. Even if it exists in Spanish, doesn't matter. Also read the English, because then you'll become familiar with the type of words, vocabulary, the issues the company are interested in. And in your interview, hopefully you'll remember those in English, if they're going to ask you in English, and
that's a very good
they'll
point.
Be impressed.
That's a very good point. And there may be information on the internet in English that isn't in Spanish. So check both.
You said Google the company, Craig. Yeah. Also, this is a piece of advice, common sense. It's not really to do with English, I suppose. But the company often these days will Google you.
Exactly.
Be careful what you've put on internet.
Yeah.
Because companies often look for your Facebook, Twitter, all sorts of things, blogs, or just what they can find out in Google. If you're an ex-serial killer and you've been in prison, I'm afraid they're probably going to find out these days.
And that photograph of you on Facebook being completely drunk at a party or maybe going to the toilet in the street, make sure you remove that from the internet, because as you will Google the company, there's a very high possibility, as Reza says, that they will Google you. So it's a good idea to make sure your profile on LinkedIn is up to date. Put your employment history on LinkedIn. It's a good idea these days to have a strong internet presence. I had a student, I don't know if I told you this, Reza, last year, who was in the field of journalism. And this student had studied journalism at university and was working in her first job as a journalist. And when I asked her how I can find out information about her on internet, she didn't have any internet presence at all. Now, I think in certain professions, like journalism, for example, it's good that you have your own personal blog, that you have your own voice, that you have even a basic website with information and things that you've written that you're proud of, just to have, when a company Googles your name, that something comes up that puts you in a positive light. And I think that I can't emphasize that enough. I think it's very important these days, even to make a short interview of yourself and videotape it and put that on YouTube. That could get you in the door to the interview. If an interviewer looks at your CV that you've sent by email, then Googles you. If they get to a YouTube video of you speaking and explaining your experience, that could get you the interview. That could be the difference between getting a job or not getting a job.
Yeah. Craig, I actually did have to apply for a job a couple of years ago. It's a job which I had already been doing, which was teaching English at the University of Ulster in a summer course. I went there for a couple of months. And as a matter of bureaucracy, I had to reapply for my own job every 2 years. It's normal.
So it was a formality.
It was just a formality. However, I thought, this gives me the chance to update Actualithar, my CV. Do you know what the update was? Can you guess?
It wasn't this podcast.
Of course it was. You were talking about internet presence, so I was able to put the www.inglespodcast.com, just in case you've forgotten, podcast. And they were like, wow, you've got your own podcast. I said, yes, along with a colleague of mine. And so they were really impressed.
That came up in the interview. Spoke about that in the interview.
And they were very impressed.
Because it might have been the reason why you didn't get the job. You realised that?
Yeah, I was taking a risk, wasn't I?
We're not taking this guy on.
Well, although they did say something about, well, we're quite interested in this guy called Craig. Can we get him instead? And I said, no, sorry, he's not available. It will have to be me.
I don't believe that. Another point, make sure your CV is well translated into English. If they ask you to send an English CV, and I've seen this many times, unfortunately, Spanish people who try to translate their CV with Google Translate or something similar, or they'll say to an English friend or to their teacher quickly in the break, can you check my CV? No, if you want a job, pay somebody.
Yeah.
To do it properly, to do it professionally, make sure that your CV is well translated in English, that there are no mistakes in it, and that it's very well presented. Yes. I think that's also very important.
It's almost better in a way to have no CV in English at all than a CV which is full of mistakes in English. It's almost worse to have one in English full of mistakes, because the HR, the human resources manager, will go, look, this person's English is terrible. You're not even going to get an interview. So it must be in correct English.
Absolutely. And prepare your questions and your answers, if possible, before the interview. So you could write a list of questions that you would like to ask at the interview and try to remember them. Don't take out a piece of paper and read them, but just writing them down and organizing your thoughts and your questions before the interview is a good idea. And try to anticipate the questions that the interviewer is going to ask you, and practice speaking about yourself, practice speaking about your job history, your experience, your qualifications, practice in front of a mirror to check your body language. You could record your voice in English and play it back. Practice in front of your dog, in front of your cat. Just keep speaking aloud so that when you go into the interview, you've got that confidence that you're well prepared and you've rehearsed, you've practiced for the interview. Shall we do an example so that the listeners can get an idea of what we mean, Reza?
Let's get cracking.
So I thought maybe I could interview you for the position of personal assistant, PA, to the Spanish Prime Minister. What do you think?
Okay.
Let's not make it the current Prime Minister, just because I don't really want to speak about it.
No, given the current climate.
Let's say it's an imaginary prime minister in the future who needs a PA, a private assistant, a personal assistant, and I am interviewing you for this position, for this post. Are you ready?
Okay.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name's John Smith. Nice to meet you.
You too. My name's Reza Shah.
How do you do, Reza? Thank you very much for coming. Nice to meet you. Please, have a seat.
Thanks.
So I've got your CV in front of me, and I must say it does look very impressive, Mr. Shah. Tell me about yourself.
Well, as you can see, I have quite a lot of experience as a PA. Admittedly, I haven't worked for a prime minister before because it's a very, very top job, but I have worked for other cabinet members of the government, and I think my experience with them will be extremely valuable in a job like the one you've advertised for.
I have no doubt. Could you describe for us your career goals? Why do you want this job, and what do you expect to happen while you're working for us?
Well, I've always been interested in the world of politics, and I'm a person who loves organization and being organized and doing things the right way and giving the best impression possible. So for me, to be a PA to a politician is a dream come true, because I get to organize and I'm in the world of politics. And my objective is simply to learn more and more and more about the workings, the dealings of the top politicians in this country, and to help them do the best job possible for the good of the country.
I see. Reza, do you prefer to work alone or as part of a team?
Well, a mixture, but above all, as part of a team. I'll be working, if I get this job, with the Prime Minister. So obviously, we're already going to be a team, the two of us, plus my colleagues and other PAs of other politicians that I have to work with. So teamwork is absolutely essential. Although there are times when one has to think for oneself, at the end of the day, it would be me who has to make certain decisions on behalf of the Prime Minister. So teamwork for me is the most important thing, although working on your own is sometimes necessary as well.
I see. Thinking back to your previous employment with the other cabinet ministers that you've worked for, what have you learned from your mistakes?
A lot. I must confess I've made many mistakes.
Many?
Many. I'm afraid so. But I like to think that I've learned from them. In a way, I'm glad I've made those mistakes, because now I've learned from them and hopefully I won't repeat them. I've tried to over-organize sometimes. Whereas now I've learned that perhaps I have to give a certain amount of flexibility and allow for the unexpected. That's perhaps the most important thing that I've learned.
So apart from your over-organizational skills, let's say, could you speak a little about your various strengths and your weaknesses?
Well, I like to think I'm a very structured person. I find it quite easy to think in terms of processes and steps of where I am now and where I have to get to, and the different stages that I have to go through to get to that stage. I find that quite easy. I've always been a structured person. That's a strength of mine, which I think could be quite useful for this job. A weakness of mine is sometimes I try to micromanage too much, as I've said. I appreciate that. I've over-organized. I perhaps have made the mistake of trying to organize other people too much, when in fact you have to trust people to be able to organize their own end. So I would say micromanaging too much is my main weakness.
I see. If we were to offer you this position, Mr. Shah, are you prepared to travel? Obviously, with this kind of post, travelling is part of the job.
Indeed. Not only am I prepared to travel, but I'm looking forward to it. I love travelling. So really, for me, the more travel involved, the better.
That's very good to hear. What are your salary requirements? What sort of salary are you looking for?
Well, I was hoping it would be something in line with my last salary.
Mm-hmm.
Something in that area.
Mm-hmm. I see. Well, obviously, once we've shortlisted our candidates, then that can be discussed further. Have you any questions for us?
Yes, I was just wondering if there were any fringe benefits.
Well, obviously, there's a full expense account whenever you travel with the Prime Minister. All your expenses in the finest hotels in the world will be paid for. The position comes with a company car, full health insurance, private health insurance and medical care. And we also pay in a pension plan for you that's connected to the government index.
Excuse me, does that insurance include travel insurance?
Of course. That goes without saying.
I see.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for your time. If there are no more questions, we'll end it there.
Thank you very much for the interview.
And we will be in touch very shortly.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I think I was very impressed with that.
Really? Would you give me a job?
I would definitely put you on the short list of one, I think. Very good.
I hope I'm a good actor because I am not at all interested in working with politicians.
I know.
Who would be?
That's why I chose this job. Notice how well Reza answered the salary question. He didn't speak particularly about money. Yeah. It's very good to be a bit...
There was a slight pause, wasn't there? It's always a tricky moment.
Yeah, and it's all, and those kind of questions about salaries should be left until the end of the interview, mm-hmm. when you speak about the, obviously, holiday time and salary and how much money you're going to get. Don't jump in with that as a first question. Leave that until the end. And there are some ways that are more polite that you could use to ask about salary. What are you looking for? What sort of salary are you looking to pay? What kind of contract would I be offered? Those kind of ways of asking for not how much money will I get. Something a bit more indirect would be more appropriate.
Some people are prepared to ask it, but me personally, I would never ask how much am I going to get. I think that frightens some employers.
But you have to know at some point, especially if you're coming back for a second interview, so
true,
that you're not having your time wasted.
That's true, but you asked me how much I expected, yeah? And my answer was something in line with, was my expression, in line with my previous job. In other words, I'm saying you have on my CV what I got paid in my last job, so I'm not going to talk money, but you've got it written in front of you, so I expect at least something similar now. Without actually saying, you know, 37,000 euros, you know. I said in line with, so they can look and say, okay, that's what he got, so that's what he's expecting.
Yeah, it was very well answered. And remember, listeners, that when we speak about salary in an interview with a British company, you're probably speaking about a yearly salary. Mm-hmm. So don't give a monthly figure. That might be misunderstood as a yearly salary.
Yeah.
You'd speak about for a 12-month period.
You didn't ask me, and I think it's common that you don't ask. And also, I didn't ask you. I think it would be a very bad idea for anybody to bring up holidays. My advice to people is don't bring up holidays in a job interview. You haven't even been given a job yet, and you're going to ask when you'll be off. Doesn't sound good to me.
No, no.
I wouldn't bring up holidays. I wouldn't mention it.
That should be at a later stage. Yeah. Once they've pretty much decided to offer you the job, then you start looking in detail at the contract.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also one final thing before we turn the tables and get Reza to interview me. Notice that in an interview, it's very, very common to use a lot of the present perfect tense, which if you think about it, it's obvious because you're speaking about your life. and your life hasn't finished.
From the past up to now.
From the past up to now. So where have you worked? How long have you been doing your current job? Lots of these questions will be in present perfect. Your answers will be in present perfect. Unless you speak about a specific time in the past with perhaps a year, and then with a go, and then it will be in past simple. So I worked in Paris 3 years ago.
So sometimes it'll start in the present perfect, but it might go into the past simple. For example, they might say, have you ever worked with a, in my case, have you ever worked with a foreign politician? And imagine I answer, yes, I have, in fact. And they say, oh, really? When was that? Oh, well, that was 5 years ago when I worked with the French Prime Minister, for example.
Exactly. Then it becomes something specific in the past with past simple. Exactly.
Be prepared for that change of tense if you're going to go into detail.
Okay.
I think I'm going to change my name. I fancy being a different person, Craig.
You could be who you like.
You too. So Craig's come for an interview. Well, you'll figure out what it is as we go along, listeners. Good morning.
Good morning. How do you do?
I'm very well, thanks. What's your name?
My name's Stephen Smith.
Stephen Smith. Let me just check you. Oh, yes, you're on our list here. Please have a seat, Stephen.
Thank you very much.
Now, Stephen, you know what the job entails, I suppose. Yes?
I do.
Okay. I presume you're a dog lover.
I love animals, not only dogs, in fact. I've always been a lover of animals. I grew up on a farm, and I've always been surrounded by animals and many, many dogs.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that, because since you're hoping to be the official dog walker of Her Majesty at Buckingham Palace, a love of animals is by far the most important essential of this job.
I understand that.
Not only dogs, as you know, Her Majesty is very keen on horses as well. You will probably be around horses a lot. Would that bother you?
Not at all. In fact, when I was younger, I had a nickname. People used to call me Dr. Doolittle because they actually believed I could speak to the animals. Mm-hmm. Not because I did little, but because I had this gift of animals understanding me. I had this sixth sense of being able to communicate with animals.
So you've always been around a mixture of animals.
Yeah? I have. Horses, dogs, cats, all sorts. Pigs, donkeys.
Okay, now.
Chickens.
As you know, Her Majesty is particularly fond of her corgis.
Yes.
That's her favourite breed.
How many does she actually have at the moment?
At the moment, I believe she has six.
Uh-huh.
I believe she has six at the moment. But she is fond of other breeds. What about yourself, Craig? Is there any breed you're particularly fond of?
Well, I love all dogs in general, but I do like bigger dogs. I do like collies and German shepherds and Dalmatians and Irish setters.
Uh-huh.
The bigger dogs.
Tell me what you know about corgis.
I know that they have a wonderful pedigree, that they come from a long line of being bred in Europe. It's a European breed. Yeah. And they actually have won the Crufts Dog Show six times. I didn't know if you were aware of that, but they have won many prizes in international dog shows, and they are very well respected in the dog community.
Now, Fifi is a slightly problematic dog for
Queens.
Oh dear,
is she?
I'm afraid she is.
What's wrong with Fifi?
The problem with Fifi is she's always at the back of the pack. She sometimes holds Her Majesty up. She delays Her Majesty. She doesn't like to walk as quickly as the others. There's no physical reason for this. She's just a bit problematic. And we were hoping you could remedy this. We were hoping you could get Fifi to keep up with the rest of the pack. Have you any ideas for how we can help Fifi?
Sorry, can I just clarify something before I answer that? So does the Queen, does Her Majesty herself actually walk the dogs, or is this just...
Oh, she does.
Is this just around the palace and the palace
grounds?
Well,
quickly around the palace, yes. Mm. I mean, you will be the person walking the dogs most, but when Her Majesty has time, she herself likes to walk the dogs from time to time.
Well, I have had some very good results in the past using the skateboard. That I did look after a three-legged terrier for a while, and strapping the terrier to the skateboard and pulling the skateboard along did help the terrier keep up with the rest of the pack. Now, I know it's quite a drastic step, and I'm not suggesting we try this until we've tried other methods, but as a last resort, that would keep little Fifi up with the rest of the group. So it is something to consider. But obviously, before taking that step, I would do physical therapy on Fifi, try to find out what the problem is, and encourage her, without pain, of course, to walk a bit faster and keep up with her friends.
Yes. Now, Mr. Smith, I see from your CV that you're a married man and you have 5 children. Is that right?
That's right.
Now, I have to warn you that sometimes the dogs give Her Majesty problems which can't be predicted. And we may have to call you to come to the palace at short notice. Is that going to be a problem for you?
No. In fact, that was going to be one of my questions. As official sort of dog walker, would I be offered accommodation inside the grounds, or would I be expected to stay within a certain area?
Yes.
How would that work?
That's a good question. There is a small bedroom set aside for you, and you can sleep there any night that you happen to be at the palace. It is very small. It's not the most comfortable room in the world, but it's yours to stay when you like. And in fact, if a dog is ill, we will expect you to be around stay at the palace.
I would want to be. But I'm assuming that there wouldn't be room for my family inside the palace.
No, I'm afraid not. Uh-huh. In fact, your family can never come to the palace for security reasons, I'm afraid.
Right. Well, they are very understanding. I have had jobs before that require 24 hours on call to be available. So they do understand that a demanding job needs some sacrifice. So I can't see there being a problem with that at all.
Well, have you any questions about your contract, Mr. Smith?
Well, what would be the dress requirements? Obviously, I'd be occasionally in the presence of Her Majesty the Queen. So would I be expected to wear certain clothes? Would they be provided for me?
You are expected to be dressed smart casual at all times.
Right.
Smart casual at all times. No training shoes ever.
I see.
Boots, as appropriate, are permitted. No training shoes, no tracksuits.
What would be the requirements on special occasions, on state visits? Would I be expected to take care of visiting animals?
Again, smart casual dress would do, because you won't be meeting any of the dignitaries, but you may be near Her Majesty but out of sight. So don't worry about those occasions. Except perhaps very occasionally, if a foreign dignitary has brought their own dogs and they wish to mix with Her Majesty's, you may have very, very, very brief encounters with those foreign dignitaries. And you will be expected to know how to handle their animals as well. Will that be a problem?
Not at all. In fact, I do know that Vladimir Putin of Russia is very fond of his cats. Yes. And Mr. Hollande, François Hollande of France, is very fond of his poodles. So I am looking forward to meeting those when they do visit. What is the biggest problem facing your care staff, your animal care staff at the moment, and how can I help you solve it?
Well, Mr. Smith, the reason we've advertised for this job is because, sadly, we had to let our previous employee go because he simply couldn't get to the palace quickly enough at short notice. I told you about the room we've set aside for you, and I'm afraid we let him go because he didn't respond to our urgent calls as quickly as we would have liked. We hope we're not going to have that problem with you.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely not. As I mentioned before, I am used to working under these conditions where I am on call 24 hours a day. And over the years, I've become used to it. I don't get as dog tired as I used to be.
Yeah. Now, you will be in charge of the animals' food. Do you know much about dog food preparation?
Yes, that was my major at university. I studied animal nutrition.
Because Her Majesty does not use tinned dog food.
Well, understandably,
she expects it to be prepared from scratch.
I would be surprised if she did. No, will I have a staff that will help me prepare the animals' food?
Yes, there is a dog cook, but you are the one who makes the ultimate decisions. Here is a document, in fact, of 20 pages. Mm-hmm. detailing the likes and dislikes of all the different dogs for Majesty. I expect you to study it, memorize it, and know how to implement it as best possible.
I will do that, and I look forward to tasting the food that's being prepared for the animals. Obviously, I'll taste it before giving it to them, so look forward to that very much.
Well, that just about wraps it up from my end. Have mm-hmm. you any more questions, Mr. Smith?
No, I think that's you've been very, very helpful, and I look forward to hearing from you when you've made your decision.
We'll be in touch in the next few days.
Very nice to meet you.
You too. Bye-bye.
What do you think? Did I get the job?
I think you'll probably get the job. I think you pushed all the right buttons and you said all the right things. And your dedication was astounding. You're prepared to even try the dog food? I'm impressed. Absolutely. I think Her Majesty would be honoured to have you as her dog walker.
And I'm very looking forward to working with the corgis. That's all we have time for, unfortunately, so thank you very much for listening. If you have any questions specifically about work vocabulary, job interviews, send us an email or a sound file. Remember, you can go to our homepage at inglespodcast.com, click on the orange button on the right side, and send us a voice message. Just make sure your microphone is turned on. Ask a question, send us a comment. And if you want to practice your English, tell us how you found our show. How did you find this podcast? Tell us what you would like us to talk about on the show in the future. And if you have a Because of My English story, something nice that's happened to you because you can speak English, you could also speak about that. Our email addresses, if you prefer an email, is craig@inglespodcast.com. That's me. Or Reza is BelfastReza, all together, todo junto, BelfastReza@gmail.com. So, it's goodbye from me.
And it's cheerio from me.
Goodbye. The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later.